Michael Malone, Chief Executive of the Analytics Institute of Ireland, and you're very welcome to our podcast series, Data Leaders. In these podcasts, I chat with some of the most important and influential people in the data analytics area in Ireland, and I try to find out a little bit about the people and personalities behind the careers. I also want to explore their philosophy in relation to data and analytics in general, and also find out a little bit about where they think the industry is going in future. I hope you enjoy this series of interviews, and if you do, please subscribe below. Thank you. So good afternoon, and you're very welcome to our Data Leaders in Conversation podcast. Today, I am joined by Alva McMacklin, and Alva is Head of Insights and Services with a company called McKesson. Very large organization that I suppose few of us have heard of, although they do carry a lot of brands that we'll all be aware of. Good afternoon, Alva.
Hi, Lorcan. How are you? Thanks very much for inviting me on.
And thank you very much for being here. So as Head of Insights and Services for an organization that's very diverse as it is in terms of products and services, I'm really interested in your analytics journey and your data journey. And we'll get into that a little bit later on. But Alva, maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about the organization, because it's quite fascinating in its own right.
Yeah, of course. And I think you did a very good intro to it there, which, you know, I often say to people, McKesson is the biggest company in the world that nobody's heard of. Myself included, to be honest, even before they bought us over from our previous owners, UDG Healthcare. And McKesson has various different parts of the business, but a very big part of it is supply chain. So I'll talk globally, first of all. So McKesson is number 8 in the Forbes 500, which is fascinating when I say it's a company people haven't heard it. We have 70,000 employees and a presence in most European countries now at this time, Canada, the States, and then obviously the brilliant McKesson Ireland, who I work for. And Ireland is a really unique business. Actually, even within the overall McKesson organization, McKesson Ireland is a really interesting one, because Ireland is a great little incubation hub. It's a great little incubation hub for everything, but it, particularly in the McKesson entity, we have businesses in pretty much all of the end-to-end parts that you could do within supply chain and pharmaceutical management in that area. So in Ireland, you know, our biggest business, I kind of referred to that at the start, was our supply chain business. And we have everything from pre-wholesale to wholesale. And then we have our retail pharmacy arm, which would be Lloyd's Pharmacy. Yeah. We have a nursing home business for medicine management called Median Healthcare. And then we have a direct-to-patient services team called TCP Healthcare. You know, so that's a very broad suite of different things. And, you know, I think the best way to describe it is, let's take one box and its journey. You know, if we start off in our United Drug business and we take a box, let's say a Pfizer box, product A, you know, they go and manufacture that wherever around the world that they manufacture it. And then they have to bring, you know, a very pallet loads of stock into the country. So our pre-wholesale business will keep pallets loads of, let's call that box A. And what our pre-wholesaler does is then sends them to wholesalers. So our wholesale business is actually the biggest customer of our pre-wholesale business. So little box starts in pre-wholesale. It goes over to wholesale. And in wholesale, they would buy, let's say, you know, 50 to 100 boxes of something a day. And then we sell it out in ones and twos to retail pharmacy. And then retail pharmacy obviously dispense it through the likes of our business Lloyd's or various other pharmacies. There's 1,800 pharmacies now in Ireland, and we deliver to them twice daily. So we have burned a lot of tire.
Phenomenal, really, when you think about it. It's something you kind of take for granted, but it's not like, you know, you go to the chemist or the pharmacy and you expect your drugs to be there. You don't expect them to say, well, actually, sorry, we're out of them. You know, you get really cheesed off when that happens. I'm on some medication myself for a kind of arthritic condition. And, you know, I have really high levels of expectancy that my drug is there if I need it. You know, I'm useless. I always wait until I'm in pain before I go down to the pharmacy. But it's amazing to think that you have that level of complexity, that level of demand, and you have to keep everybody happy across 1,800 pharmacies and hundreds of thousands of products. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, definitely. And like, it is a really interesting thing as well, because I do think, you know, pharmacy customers, there is a high level of demand because it is a professional service, you know, that they expect to walk in and whatever their ailment is, that there is a solution there for them ready and waiting, you know, but you've got to balance that against the likes of stock management. So if I'm getting a delivery twice a day, why would I keep 20 days stock of product A, you know? So it is really fascinating that the different ways, like all of those pharmacies, and a lot of them are independent owned in the country. You know, it's a lovely business where people, when they come out of college, actually opt to become business owners in it. You know, and everybody runs a different.
And who's your customer then? Would you see the pharmacies as your customer, or the drug manufacturing companies are as your customer, or are both your customer?
Definitely both. And that can be a little bit complex because, you know, we buy off, so all, pretty much most manufacturers will live in pre-wholesale, but some of them will sell direct to you. So, you know, if I go and place an order with Pfizer for, you know, 50,000 euro, you know, technically I'm their customer, but equally I'm not going to consume that stock. I have to, you know, sell that on. So we would actually see both. And why I say that, that it's not just a case of we buy in and then we do what we like with it, is the commercials in pharma is done by the own organization. So if you take an OTC product, you know, there's rep networks on the ground who are actively selling that product. So while people will buy it through us, they are the drivers of that sale. So it's an interesting relationship to have your suppliers on one end and your customers, you know, trying to keep both happy, you know, and at the same time, as you said, we're delivering to 1,800 people twice a day. We deliver 300,000 units a day. Very easy for something to get lost or not go right. And, you know, our the expectation of our customers from a retail perspective is 99% service level, which is what we operate at the moment. And, you know, anything below that, they just don't find it acceptable. And it's exactly to your point, because they have a patient standing in front of them with an earache or whatever ailment, and they want to give them a solution there and then.
Yeah, no, phenomenal, especially given the traffic network in Ireland and rural Ireland, etc.
I must ask that question. In the last 3 months, have we gotten quicker at delivering stuff?
Yeah, I'd say you might.
Now there's no traffic.
Absolutely, you might have done.
Exactly.
Now, that kind of speaks to the whole data journey, because obviously you've got tons and tons of data there with all of those pharmacies, all of those drugs, all of those different customers, and including then perhaps even the user, the end users as well. So given that, tons of data, obviously there's quite a lot of complexity there, and you're the head of insights, and you're trying to, and services, and you're trying to, I suppose, derive some meaning from all of this data that's going to be useful to the organization in terms of decision-making. I know that you kind of came from not a traditional data analytics kind of a journey, but came into this on the basis that you were trying to add value to the organization. You thought that you might be able to do something with the data. Can you expand a little bit about that and your personal journey and what you were trying to achieve with the data?
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, definitely wasn't a traditional route, but then I suppose you probably have lots of people argue there is no such thing as a traditional route anymore.
Yeah.
But where my background comes from, so my background is actually in accounting, and then I went on to specialize in strategy and innovation. And, you know, when I joined McKesson, you know, it was really at the start of my career, to be honest. You know, I was 20 years old. I was this bright student that had just come out of college, but I'd come out of accounting, got into the business, worked in kind of an administrative role, then for my sins got involved in an SAP implementation. And, you know, what I would say about all of that is it led to a hell of a lot of curiosity. And I've regularly found myself in situations where people would ask questions, just general questions in SAP, you know, how many pricing deals might we use in a month? Any kind of questions. And all of this to me, maybe it was my accounting background, was X's and O's. It was numbers on, I have to actually get the number answer to be able to prove or disprove what I'm trying to achieve. And we didn't have any data or analytics team in United Drug, which, you know, I think it's actually quite common for really large organizations, particularly like mine is a low margin organization. There isn't loads of money floating around to have lots of bodies doing lots of analysis and stuff. And then I kind of fell into a role. I was very lucky to have a mentor throughout my time in McKesson. And, you know, he was very good at he put problem, you know, kind of questions to me, and I would go off and I would investigate them. But I was pulling from everywhere. I was pulling from people's heads. I was pulling from pieces of paper. I was pulling from systems, tying them together. And I somehow kind of tumbled myself into being this analytical person in the organization. Even though I had nothing to do with data, people would come to me with the most random of problems, like even businesses. So I was primarily in our United Truck wholesale business. Even people in our distributor business would bring a problem statement to me, and I'd be like, oh yeah, I must go and figure that out. And what happened then is my career progressed on. So I started to move up the ladder, and I got busier and busier to the point that I couldn't answer people's questions anymore, but there was a definite need for it. People were curious for number answers, and I couldn't answer it. And I knew there was I knew I had a desire, and I knew there was senior people who really wanted their answers, numbers for their questions. Yeah. So I actually wrote a business case. I fought for it for a number of years, I won't lie, but eventually I got approval, and I got approval to build what I called an insights function. This has gone back about probably 4 years ago now to this day, to writing that business case. And it actually was written from the angle of nearly like a commercial business analyst. We have a need here. People have questions. And then I was given approval to create a team. And then I had to figure out, how do I do this? Because I have no real formal background in this. And it's been an interesting journey, I have to say. And what we took on, we started off with our wholesale business, which is the supply chain business that is our biggest, the biggest part of our business at the moment. And now we're just at the moment in the process of taking on our Lloyd's business. And we were speaking offline about this a few weeks ago. It's fascinating how many of the same problems I'm seeing. And, you know, that's what I find interesting about asking me to tell my story today. I'm sure there's lots more organizations who have a similar problem, very established, very big. And yet the really basic problems of, where is the data all living? What is our master data? I'd say loads of people are facing the same challenge.
Well, if you look at, even if we take an example away from maybe your traditional business, but just look at what the HSE has had to go through because of COVID, like where they're trying to understand, they don't have a single patient record. They don't know how many resources they have. They don't know how many patients are going to come in the door for testing, et cetera, et cetera. And it's really a case of, you know, everybody rolling up their sleeves to try to get these answers from wherever. And you see this time in, over the last 5 years, I've seen this time in and time out where organizations start out on that journey. And I'm particularly interested in your journey, because you obviously had to push hard for the resources to get this done. Some organizations do it the opposite way, where they say, oh, we should be doing something with data and analytics. Right, yeah. So let's hire some people and then work out what we're going to do with them. Yours was obviously the other way around, which I think is probably the more effective way. You started with the questions and then worked out how to get those answers, and then worked out from there what resources you needed to do that at scale, which is very interesting. Yeah. What were you trying, Alva, what were you trying to find out? What were the key questions that you were actually trying to find out?
I think like what you're referring to there is kind of the macro question in terms of what was I trying to figure out and do with the insights team. Is that
what you're saying? No, I think more so what questions were you trying to, what answers were you trying to get, or solutions? You said you had problem statements coming to you. So what typically were you trying to actually find out?
Yeah. And I suppose I don't have one answer to that, yeah. But what I do have is, in a low margin business and in a business that moves so much stuff and there's so many transactions, yeah. You know, but, and I do think this is particularly to low margin, you do a lot of firefighting as well. You know, there's a lot of something happens and you kind of have to jump. And what I think happens on that is decisions have to be made very quickly if you're in that kind of mode. And not all the time. Sometimes, we wouldn't be in that mode, but people are making decisions blind. So, if let's take it down to the very basics, right? And this isn't an example. Let's just say a customer comes in and says, that's grand, but I'd actually like some discount off you, right? And now you could argue that's right or wrong, but customer comes in and says, I'll give you more business. I'll give you discount. The question is, you know, how much are they buying from us? Are they engaging in some of our other service offerings? Like, we do have our core business, but we have other things, like we have buying groups and other bits and pieces. And all of those together make up kind of the sum of the parts to actually really be able to answer the question. And that's really where all the problem statements were, is people knew or tacitly thought they had an answer, but they tended to have an answer to one big part and forgot about the four other parts that really had to be factored in. Or, you know, for example, a supplier, you might go, how much is that supplier worth to me? Yeah. You know, you could look at their transaction, say, I sell that much of them, but you go, well, are they doing any marketing spend? You know, are they commercially engaging with us? You know, do we have a good relationship to them? And like, that's not stuff sometimes you can put in a database, but it is something that has to be factored in when you have a problem statement coming to you. So it was all of those kind of questions that, you know, like, I found this extremely difficult to write the business case, because it is hard to actually put into words what you're looking for. It's a cross between commercial, having a commercial view of the world, and being able to read data and then being able to do something with the data. And on the top of that, having the curiosity to not just accept, right, that's grand, I have an answer here. Is there anywhere else I can get an answer for that might bring, you know, more value to what the question that's being asked is?
Wow. Okay. Very good. That's a really good synopsis of the problem, or what we're trying to do is, as analytics people. I think it's a great example of trying the problem that you're trying to solve, which is, yeah, it is multifaceted. I assume you started with just Excel files then, did you, and worked up from there?
Yeah, 100%. So if I took it back to my days, that was definitely it. And truth be told, Lorcan, when I joined United Drug, they said, what's your Excel work like? And I said, it's excellent. And I never opened Excel, right? A lot of people do that, but it was a junior enough role. I got up to speed fairly quickly. You know, and that's what it was. It was asking people, and it was just pulling it into a spreadsheet. But then what I found by doing spreadsheet analysis, and, you know, a spreadsheet or database or wherever you end up doing it, I didn't find that actually was the value when you're presenting, particularly to really senior people. And that's where the majority of my questions were coming from. They just wanted to know there was an attachment to the email, and in the body of the email, you explained it in a way that they could understand it. So, you know, when I first hired the guys into my insights team, and Jesus, I could nearly put this on the wall at this stage, because I say to them regularly, give me words, not numbers. The numbers are important, but words to be able to say, because some people, like, I could tell you, Lorcan, I sold 100 euro yesterday, and you're going, is that good, bad, or indifferent?
Yeah.
You know, what is the context of it? Well, I sold 200 euro the day before. Well, actually, let's look at a trajectory. What is that of the piece of the pie? If the whole market is 1,000, 100 euro is not very good. You know, so the guys have gotten extremely good at that. The analysis is one thing, but how do I word it? How do I... Words, not numbers.
I thought that was fascinating, because we did talk about this before, where you say you wouldn't allow them to present any numbers to you. That's very cruel.
It is.
That all the data is numeric. But anyway,
they started writing like 50% in words, you know?
Exactly. 5-0. I assume that creates a different mindset that says, look, we have to find some meaning here that's going to be of value. There's no point in just presenting a bunch of numbers.
100%, yeah. And you know how, like, I did that. You are right, that is pretty cruel of a task to give people. What I also did is I gave them a few tools with it. So, you know, part of my role is data, but it's actually 1/6 of my role. The other parts of my role are all either financial, administration, or commercial. And I run two of the commercial business units in United Drug. One is around ostomy and stoma care, and the other one is around unlicensed medicine. So a very different hat to put on. And what I did, because we're a small team, there's only three of us. So for each of the guys in my team, when I tasked them with the words, not numbers, I gave them a business unit each to manage with words. So what they've got really good at is, because I kind of gave them a bit of ownership of the businesses, they would look at it and they would go, grand, yeah, but all they were doing was arguing with themselves. They were trying to inform themselves of how did that business perform, let's say, in the prior month or the prior week. And that was a really quick turnaround for actually getting them up to speed on the words, not numbers concept, because they could see it. They had a business unit. They had an example that they had to produce results to. And then a week later, they had to go back and produce more results. So it took it away from being this once-off problem statement or this once-off analysis to actually having a longevity view of it. And you have to kind of get into words when you start looking at stuff like that.
Whereas, you're looking at the big picture a little bit more, and you're looking at trends, and you're trying to see forecasts, and you're trying to
100%. Yeah, and they got really then quick at going, well, if let's say one of the guys in my team, if they're looking at ostomy, and they know how I look like to look at ostomy, but they also look at it the same because they're tasked with a little bit of management around it. Then if somebody from a different business unit, so even if I referred to at the start, we're starting to look at our Lloyd's business now and integrating that. And then they look at Lloyd's in the same way. They know how commercial people want to look. And as a result, when I started off and people started asking me problem, you know, giving me the problem statements, and I go off and the team would give an answer, we're now inundated with them because they don't feel like they have to have a language to talk to us. They just go, this is my business, but do you know what? I'm kind of a little bit stuck here because, for example, my costs are too high and whatever. Can you have a look at it?
Well, that's great. So it's almost like the Klingons are talking to the Cardassians or whatever. That the language in a common language. That's brilliant. Very difficult to achieve, actually. I think we've been doing in the Institute, we've been doing some research in that area at the moment about communication dynamics between data teams and between data teams and the rest of the organization. And you're right, you know, right across organizations, what we've seen is the analytics team thinking that they're producing the goods for the business, but actually thinking in their own internal with their own internal dynamic around the numbers, while the commercial team sort of thinking that the analytics team are speaking gobbledygook to them, you know, that so both sides thinking that they're doing a great job, but actually nobody actually producing results that are of value to each other, which is really interesting. And I like the way you've gone about that by forcing it down to give me words, not numbers, really does create a culture shift. Now, we say with the rest of the organization, the senior management team, have you also been involved in trying to change culture there, or do they have a culture of data-driven decision-making anyway?
I would say a certain amount of people on our senior management. So I actually work extremely closely. We have the country board in our business. And some of them have a natural appetite for, and these are the people with the natural appetite are the people who were coming to me 7-8 years ago saying, can you do this? Mm. Some of them, not so much. But what I would say is it becomes quite infectious that when they see someone else advancing because you're giving them answers or, you know, a really cool dashboard or whatever they want, you know, a KPI pack that they're now actually managing their, you know, function better with, kind of becomes infectious. So I would say, I didn't go out, you know, and sit down with every country board member and said, look, please listen to my data story. I promise you data's great. Please get involved. There was none of that. It just kind of naturally grew. And, you know, then, you know, on our MD, Paul Riley, he is a data person. So when people go in to do country board presentations on whatever, they very regularly talk to us and go, you know, well, how can I do this? And sometimes it's the smallest little thing. How do I do that in Excel? Sometimes the questions are really small like that. Yeah. Or sometimes they're huge going, I don't know how to do this. Like I know one of my colleagues, you know, we have a Cisco tool and they were struggling with trying to get data out of it. So that wouldn't primarily be our space. We're more transactional, but it doesn't matter what data, we don't limit ourselves to just transactional. If anyone comes to us with a problem that is a thing you can measure, we will help them measure it. So yeah, I would say culture has definitely massively shifted, but I wouldn't say it wasn't a planned out approach. It wasn't like year one, we're going to do this, and year two, we're going to do this. It's just by adoption and more people using data and more people seeing the results that can be produced. And the other thing I was thinking about the other day, Lorcan, is, you know, it's really about the decentralization of data as well, which is, I think with the best will in the world, and, you know, even if I said, drew a picture of what I want the insights team to be in 5 years, there's always going to be data that resides out of our team because sometimes it's just in people's heads, you know, and you take finance, for example, like finance would be custodians of, let's say, customers' age debt. Who owes us money? But how can you do an analysis and majorly not, you know, avoid, you know, such a topic? And what has really helped is actually, and you know, people, our insights team really know who the people are in the business who had an appetite for data at the start. So they would work very closely with like the financial accountants because they're always doing analysis on other stuff. But they will come to us to look to plug into their bit, and we go to them to plug into their into our bit. Same way out in our warehouse, we would work very closely with people who would work on stock management because that's their data. You know, specifics like where should I put that box? Where is, how many houses do I have left in my warehouse? How much space do I have left? They would look specifically at that. But we've plugged everybody together really well, which actually, it's a bit like tagging, you know, hitting the decision makers when you're trying to sell something. We kind of hit the data drivers in the business, and that tends to feed up as well and feed sideways and feed down.
You've got a bunch of champions, and then from those champions, then people started to...
People started to get a little bit jealous, actually, they wanted to either... And the great thing is then is that what the absolute best thing that can happen is someone else gets more curious and someone else wants access to a database and someone else wants to do it themselves, because that to me is just the gold, like that's golden, is when people want to do it themselves.
Well, my next question actually, which was around where do you want to see it? Do you want to be the repository of all knowledge, or do you want to empower everybody in the organization to be self-serving in relation to their access to analytics? Do you want your insights team to be specialists in this area, or do you see your job as just empowering everybody else to become experts themselves?
I think in an ideal world, like, I don't think you'd ever get everybody to be experts themselves, because some people are just not that way inclined. Yeah. But I would like to see every department having champions. Yes, 100%. Right. And I think without people calling it out, there's a lot of that already going on in my organization, both in wholesale and in the Lloyd's business. But I do think you have to have a natural curiosity in the departments, because even if I had an insights team that were the masters of everything, they were the, you know, data, all the data was concerned, no one's asking questions. What's the point?
Yeah.
You know, so you need data champions. And I like those people who have the curiosity to ask the questions very often have the curiosity to look for themselves, you know, but they might only have looked for themselves to a specific point.
Yeah.
So I would really see the insights role developing more into working, being able to match people up together, but yet being the repository, because there is a lot of data that we can store. And you know, one of the things I was talking to my team lead Gary about the other day is we were looking at a tool, and I was like, if I hear another tool, we have so many tools. Like, all we just want is a very simple, well, not simple, but you just want all the data sitting somewhere and then to plug one thing into it.
Yeah.
You plug five things in it, you've got to get five people to be using those five things.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I know I'm kind of getting away from your question here, but the link between the two of them that I'm saying is, if you want to have champions around the business, you can't make it overly complex either, because while the insights team might have time to learn five different things and you know how they all interact, you will lose people.
Yeah. No, I saw it with very, very effectively done in Dublin Airport Authority, the guys in DAA, with a bunch of champions. You know, they literally had T-shirts, you know, like they say, I am a data champion. But essentially, they really drove home the idea that each department had a couple of people that people could go to and would evangelize data, you know, and explain and help and support. And it's worked extremely well there. And then it just struck me when we were talking about communication and teams that one of our member companies is a bank. They use translators, believe it or not, which are people who are especially there employed to translate between the data team and the rest of the business. So you can convert data people's language into commercial people's language, and you're the translator in the middle, which is fascinating, but and amazing that just underlines the case for why we have to do these things.
Yeah, and I think if we look at tech as well, like, you know, with the way things are going around, you know, predictive analytics, like my guy's time at the moment is probably 70% getting the data, managing the data, pulling it together, doing analysis, 30% interpreting. But like, it should be the opposite.
It should be, yeah.
The data should be so easy to access that they spend way more time, you know, because sometimes you just have to sit with data and just be with it and go, there's something else, there's something missing. What else am I thinking of? If data is too simple, it's usually useless. You know, like it's actually yeah. some of the more complex stuff that you kind of go, God, that's a really interesting, you know, really interesting piece.
Yeah.
You know, even if my guys are doing an analysis and they're saying, right, the OTC market in the wholesale is doing X. What about Lloyd's? What about the market? What yeah. about other bits and pieces? And it's trying to bring that all together. So I would love to see them spending actually more time on the interpreting of the data. Because I do think AI and all the stuff that I'm not, you know, it's not my forte. I think that will give us answers to be able to present the data much quicker.
Yeah, well, you know, I think simplicity can lead to keeping things simple, can force us to be really clever in the way we think things through and to get real value out of what we're doing. Which leads me on to kind of seeing as you've gone through this journey and perhaps out the other side, and now you've got a very functioning group and that you're adding value to the business. What would be your advice to many other organizations who are at the start of this journey now, Alva? I mean, lots of our member organizations are still sort of saying, how do we build a business case for analytics? You know, how do we start? What do we do? Have you advice for them?
I'd say, obviously, like, let's assuming someone has got to the point that there is a desire in their organization to set up a function.
Yeah.
I think what I probably failed to do at the start, and sure, look, hindsight is 2020, is planning is a really big part of it. So, like, for example, I'm 3 years in now and I'm looking at a master data project, which is why is product in let's say, Lloyd's called box A and in wholesale called box B.
Right. Yeah.
Because then you spend forever trying to knit stuff together. So I would say when people are starting off, think about master data. If it's not like we talk about like what gets measured gets done, and that's so true. But don't make it overly complex for yourself to be able to measure it. So I would say master data is something I should have thought about upfront rather than on the ladder. I would say one version of the truth is really, really important. And I actually think confusing data is your biggest threat to adoption. So if you say to me today, how much did you sell yesterday? I could give you three different answers.
Yeah.
Because I could give you by invoice date, I could give you by delivery date, yeah. I could give you by drop date. And I think that stuff is so basic, but yet can be, you know, can really, really trip you up. So you know, I think always trying to stick to one version of the truth and with
well,
that,
how do you force that down the organization? If people are years there, they've got legacy systems, you know that every organization has different languages and terminology and you know, I remember when I worked in Ericsson, when I first joined Ericsson, it took me a couple of months to understand what people were talking about because everything was in three-letter acronyms. Like, it was incredible. And then eventually I found myself being fluent in that language and I didn't understand why people would be puzzled, you know. It's amazing. So how do you, if you're saying, right, we need a single source of the truth, how do you, first of all, determine what that should look like? And then how do you force that upon the organization so that you get clarity around the data?
Yeah, and it's a really interesting point. In some ways, I don't know, will you ever 100% stamp it out? Because if you 100% stamp out two versions of the truth, sometimes you can take out a bit of your beauty and analysis.
Right.
You know, so like if I took that example I just talked about, maybe it's interesting that our drop date and our invoice date are different. But I would say you have to really limit the options to the likes of an insights team. And this is where I would say, you know, the centralization is really positive.
Okay. Yeah.
To be honest, for everyone else, you know, I'm thinking of this in the most basic terms. You kind of got to just stamp it out. So like tool management is a big, and this is where we would have come up with a lot of our problems. We have two systems at the moment that report our daily sales every day. The two of them, one, the first date that you pop up to is, let's say, delivery date, and the other one is invoice date. I can't remember exactly which one it is. We just have to make the decision. Got to go around the house and say, which one is everyone using? Are we all agreed that this is it? And actually remove the other one or
right.
hide it. Because yeah. I do think if you want to have, like we're saying, champions all over the business, you know, somebody who works in customer service, you know, who just wants to know, like, just top line, what did I sell yesterday? If
yeah.
you give them too much options, that's what will kind of fry their brain. But if you bring it up to a more senior level, if I send out a report to our country board and say, we sold €100 yesterday and finance send a different report saying 90, I'm toast. You know, one of us is toast because they don't believe it. And that's where I talk about, you know, that can be a real hindrance to adoption. So in those examples, we have actually aligned to our finance team because they were they would probably be the trendsetters of that kind of stuff.
And yet you can't afford to get in the way of the business either, Albert, can you? You can't afford to become so prescriptive that you're actually slowing the business down or making it less efficient. I just remember, for example, being one of the organizations I worked with years ago, we brought in a very complex and expensive CRM system, and the business nearly drove to ground to a halt because none of us could use it, and it was and yet we were being forced to use it, and it was stopping us doing any work, you know. So you do have to be careful, don't you?
100%, yeah. And like I do think all data teams are a supportive function. You know, I don't think they're not the core function. You've got to support other people, but that doesn't mean you can't be proactive and go around and say, right, what is, you know, something like data is a very basic example, but I could come up with loads of different things. And, you know, just making sure everyone is looking at things in the same way. And you've hit the nail on the head there, which is, you know, a lot of people in my organization have been there for 20, 30 years. That's just always the way it was done. But if everyone has always done it slightly differently, it can be very difficult to get people online with it. But I do tend to bring it back to finance, particularly around that stuff.
Yeah, well, you have to be very careful as well. If everything is in people's heads, then when those people eventually leave the business, that knowledge, that corporate knowledge is gone with them as well, which, you know, isn't a good idea, you know. And I certainly remember working in organizations, they are changing, but lots of organizations still make their decisions based on gut feeling or experience and stuff like that, which, you know, isn't scalable, isn't replicable, you know, is actually a danger to the business. And sometimes businesses don't realize that.
And like even in our organization, we would still have a chunk of that where someone's gut feeling says we should do this. Now they're just polite enough to go say, can I have the data to back that up? But that's okay.
Okay. I mean, and maybe they're
wrong. Talk about culture, that's still a shift in the right direction, even if that's the level you're at. So I wouldn't be for people beating themselves up if that's where you are, you know.
Absolutely. Alva, we're coming towards the end of our time, but it's been a really fascinating discussion. And I think it's been a value to people who are on that journey at the moment. And what we would always say, I'm sure you'll agree with me, is look, you're not alone. There's a community of us out there all going through the same thing, all trying to solve the same problems, essentially, irrespective of whether you're a government organization, a commercial organization, a corporate organization. Essentially, all the problems are very, very similar, and all the solutions are very similar too. But I think I'm really grateful to you because it's very valuable for people to hear a kind of warts and all journey about this, and that there's more than one way of approaching all of these problems. For you, for the future, what is, let's finish on this, what is your kind of ambition for your analytics and insights teams and the role analytics will play in your organization in the future? Where would you like to see it?
I would like to see it actually roll out on a global scale.
Right.
So, you know, if you want to talk about that kind of warts and all stuff, you know, here's me standing here in a huge organization going, we didn't get it perfect. You know, we had to start from scratch 4 years ago, and you know, we're definitely not perfect now, but we've come a long way. I look at some of my other McKesson affiliates around different parts of Europe and across the States and Canada, and they haven't gotten it right either. So I would really like to see us coming together as one global organization trying to bring it forward, because if you're working in the same business everywhere, you know, like another basic example, if you want to commercialize your data to a supplier in country A, and you're not doing it in country B, it can kind of undermine you. So, you know, locally, my aim is that the insights team will flourish without me. And, you know, that's kind of what you always want, that I become irrelevant to them. And then that they become part of the wider global scale. Because similar to, you know, what the Analytics Institute is doing across the globe in McKesson, we're all fighting the same problem as well. So it's learning from each other. And, you know, Ireland is a great little incubation hub. I mentioned that at the start. So, you know, we've done a good few bits and pieces in Ireland, but I think we should be sharing that journey with other countries, you know, that we are in that business. And just to your point there, Lorcan, you know, I remember when I first started you know, building up the insights team. And I kind of, you know, was saying to myself, oh God, am I the right person for this? I don't really have it. I had a lot of appetite. I really wanted it. And I really wanted it for the business. Yeah. But I didn't have loads of skill where I had done this before and I knew exactly what I was doing. I didn't, you know, and actually that was around the time that the Analytics Institute started off. And it was great to meet some people. But I would say, you know, like, it's okay. It's good to hold your hand up and say, I'm just starting from scratch. So, you know, any other member organizations who want to reach out to me, please do. And I'm happy to give my story to you or help you along the way. But so is loads of other people, you know, and it's okay.
I'm struck by that, Alva. That's very generous of you. And I would say that's repeated right across the organization, our organization, the willingness of people to share and be really honest about, you know, the mistakes they've made and what they've done. It has been absolutely inspiring. And I'm being really sincere in this. I my background is in kind of in corporate life. And I worked for the government and I worked for in marketing and international business development, all sorts of different sectors. But I'm really struck by in this sector is the most cooperative, friendly, community-based that I've ever come across, which it's phenomenal, you know, and I think it might be down to the fact that I think it attracts curious people. So they want to learn, you know, and you mentioned the word curious about five times in the conversation. I was noting that it really does, you know, you want to be curious. And I think also people are willing to, there's no egos involved. I think people are willing to learn and put their hands up and say, I don't really know, which is brilliant. And that's the only way we ever learn anything.
Yeah, 100%.
Alva, that's a really positive note to finish on. Thank you very much for your time. I really enjoyed our chat. I wish you every success in the future. And I look forward to a time when we can all get back together again and get networking and chatting and sharing thoughts again. And hopefully that'll be very soon. Thanks very much, Alva.
Thanks, Orkin. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to hear more from other data leaders, please subscribe below.